Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
On the line with us is Congressman Ro Khanna, Vice Chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, representing the 17th District of California. Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A .house.gov is his website. Rep Ro Khanna on Twitter, and he will be with us taking your calls in a progressive town hall meeting. Congressman Khanna, welcome back. What's on your mind today?
We were just with the Poor People's Campaign. Reverend Barber has been in Washington, is going to have a big march, actually, to focus on the things that we still haven't done, even with two chambers of Congress and the presidency.
Oh,
increasing the weight. You know,
yeah, yeah. He's a regular on this program. We should have gotten him on. Forgive me, I interrupted you. Continue.
It's things that are so basic. Increase the minimum wage. I mean, the wage is stuck at $7.25. One of the things he said, which really resonated with me, is we ought to be voting on a $15 wage every week. I mean, the Republicans vote on repealing the Affordable Care Act every week. I mean, we need to have the same intensity. We need to vote on providing people with health care, having Medicare for all. We heard from a young person that stuck with me, whose grandfather, a veteran, basically died because he couldn't get access to mental health care in this country. So I think that Reverend Barber has one of the strongest moral voices in this country. And one of the remarkable parts of his coalition is it's white, black, Latino, Asian, really the multiracial coalition that Dr. King envisioned with Dr. King's famous speech, of course, in Montgomery, where he said that Jim Crow is something that the Southern aristocrats feed to poor white Americans to try to distract them from the economic issues. And Reverend Barber is really carrying on that legacy.
Yeah, it's an important legacy, and he's such a good guy. Malcolm in Bluebell, Pennsylvania, you are on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Regarding the January 6th committee being kind of split on if they would actually send over a criminal referral, it's pretty tough to keep people energized and tell us to get out and vote when politicians continuously, you know, get away with defying subpoenas and everything else.
I think Jamie Raskin had it right, where he said that the entire hearing is basically a referral to the Justice Department. Congress doesn't formally refer things for criminal prosecution, but there's no doubt that the Justice Department is watching and they're laying out the evidence, and there has to be accountability. And so I think that the committee has struck the right tone.
Morris in Long Beach, California, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Congressman, check this out. I know how to address inflation. Remember when former President Nixon was dealing with the same issue? He froze wages. He froze prices. I'm thinking that President Biden can issue an executive order telling all the oil companies that they can no longer sell oil overseas, just like we can't sell stuff to Cuba, can't sell oil. All that stuff's got to be sold right here because they make more money when they sell overseas. What do you think of that idea?
I support it 100%. Jack Reed and I called to do this 6 months ago, and people say, oh, you're disrupting the market. People weren't allowed to sell oil overseas until 2015, and we ought to ban the exports, at least temporarily, while we are in a national emergency. That would help sever the price of the United States from the global market. People say, well, we get a disproportionate amount of light shale oil here, and our refineries are more geared towards crude oil. We can fix that. We could have a one-to-one exchange on that. Anyway, the point is a lot of economists have looked at this and say it would bring down gas prices. I just had a meeting with the White House yesterday pushing for it, and they're saying they're considering it, but it's time to do it.
Wow. Are you and Jack Reed putting together the legislation to do this, or is this something that can be done by executive order?
This is something that the president could do. I mean, we're going to put legislation as well, and we have a letter to the president. The president has the authority, at least for a temporary period, to suspend the fuel. Now, the White House was saying, well, what about some of our European allies? They can have carve-outs. They can have exemptions. But do we really need to be selling oil right now to China, to other countries in the world? I mean, I think right now having a temporary ban on the export would be the single biggest thing this president and we can do to lower gas prices.
Yeah, you're singing my song. In fact, I think I pitched that to you last week or the week before. Amen.
Yeah, you know, I know you've been on board with it, but, yep. You know, the interesting thing is Sheldon Whitehouse and I did the windfall profit tax and taxing big oil, and Jack Reed and I did this export ban, and now the White House is at least considering it. But we need to act. We can't just do nothing.
Yeah, amen. David in Columbus, Ohio, you are on the air with Representative Khanna.
I really appreciate your efforts to cut back on defense. I also appreciate your efforts to cut price gouging. I think the Defense Department has been price gouging us for whatever, 50 years. So I think we need to look at that. And I don't know if you have any new bills on this. I'd be glad to promote this with my representatives and my senator. I think the problem is nuclear power and nuclear weapons have been linked too much, and they're killing us at the state and federal level.
It's not just that the Defense Department is bloated. It is that the money is going to defense contractors and defense executives in many cases that are lining their pockets and have nothing to do with national security. I led the TransDigm investigation that showed that TransDigm was ripping off the American taxpayers millions and millions of dollars because they were overcharging for supplies 1,000 times more than what it cost when they were basically sole providers, so I had sole contracts. So we need to reform the entire procurement process, not allow for these sole contractors without price transparency, and really root out the giveaway to defense contractors in the defense budget.
Robin in Boulder, Colorado, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Here's a thought that I have, and actually it's more of a question. Now that Republicans are getting a rudimentary education on how the Constitution works and the limited powers of the vice president when it comes to counting electoral votes, Congressman, do you have any concern that this issue is going to be next on the right-wingers' hit list, is trying to get that part of the Constitution changed? So if they don't like the results of the Electoral College, the vice president will have the power to pick the president, and I will hang up and just listen to your call.
And I'll add to that, Congressman Khanna, that just 2 weeks ago I got an email from FreedomWorks, I'm on their list, saying that they had suggestions to reform the Electoral Count Act. So, your thoughts?
This is the big concern. I mean, they don't have to amend the Constitution to give the vice president more power. They're trying under the current rules to rig the game by electing governors and secretary of states in all these swing states who are basically going to be committed under the Constitution to electing Donald Trump. You know, I was having a conversation with one Republican congressman who said that the Constitution literally says, as he reads it, that a state legislature or state can flip a coin to determine who they should vote for president, and that there is no obligation for them to follow the election results. If this is the interpretation, and if you elect governors and secretary of states that are loyal to the party, within the system, basically someone become president who doesn't win the popular vote. The Electoral Count Act reform is so important because it would stop that by saying that courts have to review any time a state sends delegates that are different than the popular vote winner. And we still haven't been able to pass that through the Senate.
I think your Republican congressman is right. The Constitution says it very clearly that the state legislatures can decide which electors they're going to send. They choose to send the electors based on the election that they hold in their states, but they don't have to. We should fix that.
We do. And the Electoral Count Act, the interesting thing is that the states all have laws in the state saying that they will respect the popular vote winner for who they send. And what the Electoral Count Act says is you can't just retroactively get rid of that state law. And it would be hard for a state legislature to pass a law saying let's ignore that before the election. So it's a well-worded statute, but it does no good if it's just caught up in the Senate.
Yeah, there you go. Susan in Phoenix, Arizona, you are on the air with Representative Khanna.
The feds are raising the rates, interest, and I think all that's going to do is benefit the pay cash investors. But Obama had a plan where he gave $5,000 to new first-time home buyers, but an even better plan was, believe it or not, President Reagan, which I took advantage of. He had it that any foreclosed home could only be the only ones to be able to put a bid on it. They had to qualify low income. And all the bank could ask was what was owed on the property. So is there any chance we could do something like that? Thank you.
It's an interesting suggestion. I didn't know about that program that President Reagan had, and I'm happy to look into it. But I agree with you in 2 points. One, we have to figure out how to increase home ownership. It stayed about 65%, and home ownership is the biggest way that you increase wealth in this country. And two, that we made a mistake by having so much of our policy focused on bank bailouts and not on helping people whose homes were being foreclosed on. And so if there are any policies that would help actually target the money towards people who are either facing foreclosures, threat of foreclosure, or have had foreclosure, that would be my preference.
Susan in Seattle, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
H.R. 4853, which, would require the FDA to implement regulations within about a two-year period for home health care devices that would be non-visual accessible. Things like blood pressure cups, CPAP machines, monitors for diabetics or chemo monitors, which would allow blind people to be able to stay in their home and in their community. And I know from talking to many of my friends, we're all very concerned about the proposed cuts to Social Security and Medicare, and to be able to, you know, even stay in our homes and take care of ourselves and not be a burden to our family and friends. And my question is, I know that many times when bills are introduced, you tuck them into other must-pass bills. And if you could look into it and maybe help us put it into some must-pass bill like the Defense Department that nobody questions.
Susan, I appreciate that. I will look at that. I mean, first, we need to be very clear that we shouldn't have any cuts to Social Security or Medicare. We need to be increasing those benefits. But I got concerned when the Republicans are saying if they take back the House or Senate, they want Biden to start a Simpson-Bowles-like commission. That was a terrible idea during the Obama years, and that commission was basically going to cut Social Security when we need to be increasing it. In terms of funding for the type of equipment and services that you talk about for people of need, I am for increasing that funding.
Rodney in Sioux City, Iowa, you are on the air with Representative Khanna.
What are the three unifying points from the DNC? We do not have direct messaging. Health care for people of color and poor people is terrible. Public education is a total failure. And housing. I mean, if we don't have three core values that we stand for, Republicans, they're going to clean our clocks come midterm.
Well, Ronnie, I think you'd be heartened by Reverend Barber and the Poor People's Campaign. This is his message, that there are 140 million Americans who are poor or low wealth, and we need to meet their needs. And I think the 3 points ought to be, well, let's increase our wage, have a livable wage, make sure we have Medicare for all, health care for everyone, and then housing, making sure that everyone has adequate housing and some path to home ownership. So those are the core values, and we need to keep fighting for them.
Nancy in Chenoa, correct me if I'm saying it wrong, Nancy, Washington, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
What about doing clubhouse programs for mentally ill people will help get them off the street? They gently coax people into working full-time jobs, and they supply housing for them. And also there's adult foster care, because there's a lot of homeless people that are just mildly mentally disabled. And sometimes there's literacy problems. And so why can't we do more of that instead of just trying to move them on, which doesn't work because then they wind up in tent cities?
Nancy, you're absolutely right that we need to have far more support services for people, mental health being available. It's one of the biggest problems that many of our fellow citizens don't have access to the basic mental health care that they need. For others, what we need is a harm reduction for those with substance problems and how we actually get them to turn around their lives. But just putting them in a housing or a shelter is not going to solve the issue. And we're penny-wise and pound-foolish in some of our policies.
Dennis in Aptos, California, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
I would think that the funding for the Ukraine right now shouldn't be coming out of the seized assets of Russian oligarchs. So that's my number one question. I have another question, though, and it's this. Why aren't the Democrats using national security as a reason to vote Democrats, keep them in power in the House and the Senate? And this would be in regards to gun safety, in regards to the health of the people of this nation with the pandemic, and point the finger at corporate America and accuse them of price gouging, especially big oil. There should be ads running 24/7 doing just that.
I agree with you. I was on CNBC this morning making that exact case. I mean, big oil is engaged in total price gouging. They're getting these record profits, and they're giving it all away to Wall Street. It's not like they're drilling more or investing in refineries, and we need to be more aggressive in going after them. We need to pass Sheldon Whitehouse and my bill, the windfall profits tax, and get that money back to the American consumer. Boris Johnson passed it in England, a conservative government. So either we're going to get aggressive on price gouging and go after some of the corporate price gougers, or we're going to be in a defensive posture come the midterm elections.
Catherine in Medford, Oregon, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
I had a lot of thoughts about student loans and exploding balances, and I had an idea. Even if all student loans are forgiven, future generations will still be prey to predatory lenders. So my thought is to put a limit on the time of a student loan. Everyone goes on an income-based repayment, and then let's say it's 10 years. Well, every year the total balance is reduced by a tenth until the balance is zero. And that way, I think there would be less resistance from other people who say, well, I paid off my loans, why can't you? And it'll prevent that continual predatory stance that are going against students.
Let me tell you, as someone who took out $100,000 of student loans and paid them back, I have absolutely no resentment for other people who may have taken out loans and need to have them forgiven. I just think I was one of the fortunate ones in society, but I have a lot of friends and others who didn't get the same breaks. But my view of it is forgive the loans at least for people who are middle class and working class. And by the way, it's not the rich or the upper middle class who are taking out these loans. It's
people coming from working and middle-class families. And then you need, to your point, you need to have some free public college so that you don't have a perpetual cycle of people continuing to take out these loans. And that, I think, is the best way of solving the issue.
Nancy in Woodland, California, you're on the air with Representative Connor.
Yeah, I understand that the U.S. Postal Board is doesn't have the votes to get rid of DeJoy, but why can't he just be removed by the president or Congress or somebody based on his financial conflicts of interest?
It's a good point. I mean, I assume that Congress may have the power of impeachment. I don't know how. I haven't looked into that because obviously the board has that power. I don't think the president does because I think it's semi-autonomous, but it is worth looking into whether Congress has that power. At the very least, we ought to be doing hearings on it to expose the type of conflict and corruption that he has.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And welcome back. Michael in Fairview, Michigan. You're on the air with Representative Connor.
Is it going to be some indignant attitudes from the Democrats when they find out about this Supreme Court's wife being sadistic like she is? I mean, it would be nice to see some outrage.
When are Democrats going to start bringing up the topic of Ginni Thomas? It seems like there should be some outrage around her participating in the January 6th riot.
We have been pushing that. Obviously, you saw that the January 6th committee has brought that to light. And my anticipation is we're going to have congressional hearings on that conflict because we need a code of ethics for the Supreme Court justices without conflicts of interest.
Patrick in East Lansing, Michigan, you're on the air with Representative Connor.
Representative Connor, we really appreciate what you've been doing with the Progressive Caucus. I have a question about the child tax credit. And the story I want to tell you is on the Poor People's Campaign calls, I've listened repeatedly week in and week out because I participate in their national calls and I work with their groups here in Michigan. I've heard repeatedly parents who got the full child tax credit and they could stop an electric shutoff or a water shutoff. They could avoid being made homeless, all of these ways in which their lives were improved, and then it was ripped away from them. And they felt as if they, you know, were made worse. And it was very disheartening to hear. And I think politically, you put yourself in a worse position. So my question to you is, when Senator Manchin says you have to work to get this full benefit, the study that I read in the Washington Post by Ashley Nunes from R Street Institute in Harvard Law School says that that's going to exclude 1.5 million single parents, mostly women, and it's going to make them have to earn a wage outside of the poverty threshold to get out of poverty. And I just wonder, we have the highest rate of single parenthood in the world, some of the lowest wages. We can't get the one fair wage passed because of the filibuster. What can you do to help get the child tax credit fully refundable without a work requirement so we don't lose a lot of these voters in the midterms and Biden can keep his promise to help people in poverty?
Well, I completely agree with you. I mean, look, the child tax credit was the biggest anti-poverty measure that we've taken. It put money in the pockets of people who are poor, who are low income, and we need to make that permanent and we need to keep it fully refundable. And it's a real shame that we haven't been able to get that done. It's because we don't have enough votes in the the Senate on it, but I am absolutely committed to that. It's about the one of the most effective things we can do to reduce poverty in this country.
Do you think that we can hold on to the Senate this fall?
Oh, I do. We've got some good candidates with Fetterman and Tim Ryan. I think state by state, we have a real fighting chance. But we're going to have to do more and be more aggressive on going after the oil companies, on going after corporate price gouging, on doing things to actually reduce prices.
Yeah, I'm with you. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Got a quick question for Congressman Connor?
Yeah, Congressman Connor, I have another elections question because an attorney that goes on a lot of the liberal shows, I think he gave a surprise answer. He was asked, what if Kamala Harris is in the same position facing states offering two alternate state slates of electors? And the answer was, look, if it's like the Trump administration and there's a lot of corruption, you know, co-conspirators, if there's a lot of corruption, there's nothing anyone can do. So I'm like,
so Dave, what's your question, please?
Yeah, yeah. My question is, what does the Federal Elections Commission, what is their role? Do they have any oversight into what's valid as far as an elector goes?
Great question.
Now, the FEC largely is about the campaign finance and enforcing election laws. They don't, they won't get involved in something like who becomes president. What the Electoral Count Act would do, if we passed it, is say that every state has a law on its books right now, all 50 states, that the state legislature is bound to follow the popular vote winner in that state. And the Electoral Count Act would say if a state retroactively after the election wants to depart from the law on their books, that would trigger immediate judicial review. Now, people would say, well, the Supreme Court has Republican nominees. But the reality is all of the court cases that Trump filed failed. And so far, at least, the courts have been willing to, at least in 2020, uphold basic democracy. And so the fix to this is at least to kick it to the courts, as opposed to now, which just allows the state legislature to do whatever they want.
Bill in Clifton, New Jersey, you're on the air with Representative Connor.
The House does some great work, but it goes to die in the Senate, like almost every day. I was wondering if there's ever been an accounting for all those bills that you've worked on, done research for, your salaries, and goes to waste. That must cost a lot of money. And the Senate should, you know, be made aware of that because it's ridiculous. You know, they should be voting on within 2 weeks. They should have a Senate rule to vote on everything up or down within 2 weeks.
Bill, I completely agree with you. I mean, first of all, we need to have a clear communication of how many things the House has passed. $15 wage, expanding Medicaid, gun laws, prescription drugs, lowering the cost, child care, which have just died in the Senate. And there has to be some willingness, I think, on the Senate to have vote after vote after vote on it. Senator Schumer could call these votes up so that people really understand where everyone stands and where the blocks are.
Tim in Shelby Township, Michigan, you are on the air with Representative Connor.
After January 6th commission, are they going to put a listing out for every Republican who fought in a treasonous way and committed sedition, every congressman and senator, so it goes to that district and points out that these guys are anti-American?
I think it's public knowledge of the people who were inciting the insurrection. And I think that that was exposed, obviously, by the January 6th committee. I mean, you had people asking Donald Trump for a pardon. You don't ask someone for a pardon if you don't think you may have criminal exposure. And so that we do need to make sure that those members of Congress who participated in the January 6th insurrection, that they're held accountable just like anyone else.
I've been watching this last night. All the news coverage was about, and a lot of the stuff in the committee was saying Mike Pence could determine the next president. But in fact, it was Mike Pence has to throw it to the House, which means that there have to be members of the House collaborating with this. Do you think that you guys are going to be looking into that?
Absolutely. And the committee does. And you're absolutely right. I mean, the reality was that they had more of the delegation, the 20, you know, because in the House, you don't vote just by who has more of the majority. Each state casts one vote. That's right. How the Constitution is written. And so what the plan had to have the buy-in ultimately of McCarthy for it to work. And there needs to be more of a look investigation. I think the committee has looked into this, and this is why they wanted to subpoena McCarthy, into what was the coordination between the House Republicans and the White House, and whether there was some plan to have them overturn the election.
Yeah, it is truly breathtaking. Congressman Khanna, thanks so much for dropping by.
I love being on.
Thank you. I realize you're on the run there with the Poor People's Campaign, and thank you very much.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
My op-ed today over at HartmanReport.com is titled, Forgiving Student Debt Isn't Giving a Gift, It's Righting a Wrong. And I start out by quoting a right-wing website. Well, actually, I start out by pointing out that Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, the Democrat of Minnesota, Representative Omar, along with 55 colleagues, just sent a letter to Education Secretary Miguel Cardona wanting details of the coming forgiveness of student debt. I Googled student debt forgiveness. I DuckDuckGoed it. And the first thing that popped up was a Fox News article by a woman saying, there are millions of Americans like me for whom debt forgiveness is an infuriating slap in the face after years of hard work and sacrifice. And I'm like, this, to be charitable, is BS. Forgiving student debt is not a slap at anybody. It is righting a moral wrong inflicted on Americans by Ronald Reagan and his morbidly rich Republican buddies. You know, prior to the Reagan Revolution, pretty much anybody could go to college. My mom put herself through Michigan State University, which is no slouch in terms of being a good college, working as a summer lifeguard up in Charlevoix, Michigan. And she graduated magna cum laude. She could do that. And her father was dead. Her mother was city manager for Charlevoix. Not a wealthy family at all, but that's what they did. I talk about how my dad and Louise's dad both, went to college on the GI Bill. Her dad ended up the attorney general for the state of Michigan. We found that every dollar we invested in our young people coming back from World War II with the GI Bill, every dollar we invested produced a $7 return in additional tax revenue because those people made more money because they had an education. So, for most of the history of the United States, Abraham Lincoln put into place free college. 73 land-grant universities across the United States where college was free or close to free. MSU was one of them. And Thomas Jefferson created the first free college in the United States, the University of Virginia. And he was very proud of the fact that the day he died, in fact, it's on his tombstone, which he himself wrote, that, that's more important than him being president. In fact, I believe his tombstone doesn't even mention his being president. I think it mentions that he wrote the Virginia Declaration of Rights, that he founded the University of Virginia, and that he was the author of the Declaration of Independence, if I'm remembering correctly. So, we have a long tradition of access to colleges in the United States. But what happened was, when Reagan came into office, 80% of college education was paid for by state and federal money. States picked up 65%, federal money picked up 15%. So only 20% was paid for by students through tuition. Reagan, first of all, when he was governor of California, he ended free college in California, and he cut the budget for the University of California by 20%, the amount of state money going to them. So they immediately had to jack up tuition. Then when he became president, he did the same thing to federal support for colleges. And so, you know, the legacy of Reaganism, the reason why we have a $1.7 trillion student debt overhang that's preventing people from starting families, buying homes, starting businesses, the whole reason for this is because we went from 80% of college costs being paid for by government when Reagan came into office to only 20% of it being paid for by government now as a result of 40 years of Reaganomics. And it has gutted American education. It has gutted the American middle class. We've got this massive debt. And, you know, there's this debate even among liberals who are saying, oh, well, you know, you've got to, if you're going to do away with student debt, you got to make sure it doesn't go to rich people. Rich people don't have student debt, number one. And number, I mean, come on, who's going to sign up for an 8% student loan when they got enough money in the bank that they could just pay for it? So, number one, that's a crazy notion. And number two, it's not, you know, yes, you know, a lot of people worked really hard to pay off their student loans. Good on them. But they shouldn't have had to in the first place. This is not a slap in their faces. This is acknowledging, you know, hey, you did good, but it's acknowledging that the people who couldn't pay off their student loans, typically through no fault of their own, should never have had to have student loans in the first place. We are literally the only developed country in the world that has a student loan industry attached to our backs like a giant blood-sucking leech, just like we are the only developed country in the world that has a massive for-profit health insurance industry also attached to our back like a blood-sucking leech. These two things, frankly, I would put these at the top of the Democratic agenda. People talk about, you know, how should Democrats message? It should be health care for everybody at no cost, college for everybody, and trade school for everybody at no cost. Every other country in the world can do this. Canada does it. All of Europe does it. Costa Rica does it, for God's sake. They have free health care and free college education. We can do this, can't we? Anyhow, you can read the whole rant complete with all the links and sources and everything else. No commercials, no ads at all, over and for free, over at HartmanReport.com. It's titled, Forgiving Student Debt Isn't Giving a Gift, It's Righting a Wrong. Bob in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
There's still millions of people that didn't get their tax refunds from last year as of filing date this year. And it took me 7-8 months last year. I'm 7 months in now. Right. And I don't know if this administration has done anything to replace the workers that Trump had turned out of IRS and just caused such a backlash.
They have not been able to do that yet. Part of the additional funding for the IRS and also for the EPA and a couple of other agencies was included in the Build Back Better legislation. It got shot down. So right now the IRS is kind of stuck at the staffing that they have. They may be hiring, I'm not sure, but it is just a disaster. And in fact, my recollection is that the IRS is still headed up by a Donald Trump appointee. So,
that's horrible.
Yeah, it is. So the problem is, of course, Republicans in the House and Senate who don't want the IRS auditing rich people, and therefore they're trying to kneecap it.
Right.
You know, the bottom line is we need to get more Democrats elected. Bob, thanks a lot for the call. It was a good one. Cliff in Santa Clarita, California. Hey, Cliff, what's on your mind today?
I'm doing great, but I'll get better.
Okay, me too. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Sorry, Tom. I'm on my way into a popular department store. I think it was Monday. Mm-hmm. And there's a table with a couple fellas gathering signatures. They're trying to recall George Gascon out here, the DA for L.A. County. I declined politely to sign their signature. I'm heading into the store. I start talking to this lovely older woman. We're talking liberal politics for a minute. And I mentioned that I called the Tom Hartman program. I've been calling for like 10 or 15 years. Tom, her eyes lit up. She loves you so much.
Oh, that's sweet.
And we, No, it was great. It was, and then she asked me my name, and I said, "Oh, I'm Cliff from Santa Clarita," and she recognized my name from calling in. It was such a wonderful, delightful connection that we had.
That's marvelous.
Talking politics, and it's your program brings people together, Tom.
Well, thank you, Cliff. Is that what you call about?
Anyways. No, water. I'm calling about water, Tom.
Okay. Yeah, you got a problem there in California.
I keep reading about this. We're in a mega drought. We got the crisis out here. All the lakes and reservoirs are super low. The Colorado River is super precarious right now. My question to Tom is desalination plants on large scale, are they feasible? And if they are feasible, why aren't they building them? And if they're not feasible, what are we going to do?
They are feasible and not feasible. For example, the Gulf countries are using desalination plants aggressively to provide themselves with fresh water. I mean, they're right on the Gulf, right? But it is brackish water or salty water. But the problem is basically the way desalination works. There's two main techniques. One is to push it through a filter. Through a membrane that is selectively permeable, that will not let the salt through but does let the water through. The problem is with that is that it requires an enormous amount of pressure and you've got to continuously clean the filters. That takes a lot of energy. The other way to do it is to boil water, let it condense and catch the condensate. That requires a lot of energy, a lot of heat. And so in the Gulf states, they can do that because they got free oil and they run them off oil. There is some speculation that it could be done using solar collectors, that, you know, a couple of acres of perhaps even floating solar collectors could generate enough electricity to run a desalination plant. The problem is getting it to scale, and I know that there's some demonstration projects being done in California around this, but I'm not all that familiar with the state of the art right now. But, an awful lot of emphasis instead is being put on simply recycling water. You've got numerous communities now in California and around the world that are recycling wastewater, both gray water and black water, into drinking water, into potable water. And that's certainly a better option for inland communities, for example, like in California, like in the valley. Getting the water from the ocean would be a problem to begin with, much less the desalination route. But that's everything I know about that, Cliff.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Eric in Fountain Valley, California. Hey, Al. Eric, what's on your mind?
I wanted to get back to the topic about fascism in the United States. And apparently more than 50% of people now are in agreement that it's coming. I'm kind of reaching that conclusion, too. But I think that what we're looking at is Republican Party trying to declare one-party rule in our country. And I don't think that's going to work for long. And particularly, I don't think it's going to work in the blue states. And I'm trying to envision, because I'm seeing this as a real possibility, how this is going to play out. And are the blue states going to, secede? Are the red states going to try to occupy them? I'm kind of like taking the next step and going, how's this actually going to play out in the United States?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Eric, I wrote a piece a week or so ago on HartmanReport.com titled, What Would a Fascist America Look Like? And, it would not be that different from what we have right now, other than that you would suppress dissent, that politics would become basically a charade. That the media would end up owned by the fascists. Viktor Orban laid it out in Hungary. This is clearly what the Republican Party wants to do, and Orban has largely turned Hungary into a fascist state. I think it's very, very possible that this is going to happen here in the United States, and it's absolutely what the Republican Party is working toward right now, and it's very, very troubling. Eric, thanks a lot for the call. Bob in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My thought or question is regarding forgiveness of student loans. Over the last 9 years, my daughter has made over $42,000 in student loan payments for a $40,000 loan principal.
And
she still owes over 30. It is. And she still owes over $30,000. So this just feels like low-hanging fruit to me. Let's forgive all student loans where the principal has already been paid. And, they've already...
At the very least.
For us, it's like the low-hanging fruit, right? At least I mean, the grifters already got lots of interest money, you know, from those loans. So they've already, you know, gotten well past the principal. Anyway, that was my thought. It just seems like a real easy one. You know, the loan's been paid.
It's a great start. That's a great start. Bob, thank you. That's putting that on my radar screen. Larry in Los Angeles. Hey, Larry.
Just for the record, since Biden's been president, production of oil, crude oil in the United States has actually gone up. The news media won't say that because it messes up their
narrative.
It messes up their propaganda. They're trying to blame Biden for the increase in gasoline. But we've actually increased our production, and anybody can check this by going on the internet and looking up oil production in the United States, and make sure you include 2022. Mm-hmm. You'll see that it's actually gone up. There's no reason for the prices to be as high as they are today.
Well, a lot of that increased oil production is being shipped overseas, as Congressman Khanna pointed out in the last hour.
But even still, there's no reason why we should be paying that higher gas price.
No, Bernie pointed out a couple of days ago, the last time oil was $118 a barrel, which is where it was 2 days ago, the price of gasoline was $3.25 a gallon, if I'm remembering correctly.
But everybody should check out the graphs. The graphs show you that we don't have a shortage of oil. That's one of the lies that our right-wing media is telling us.
Yeah.
I heard you talking the other day about revenues.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to have enough time to get to it. But anyway, if you check revenues when Republicans cut taxes, they always go down. If you look at the quarterly revenues, don't look at the yearly.
Right. They initially drop, and then they... Go ahead.
Yeah, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, Donald Trump all saw revenue drop when they cut taxes.
Absolutely. And then it catches up because the economy grows. But yeah, absolutely, Larry.
Listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archive.
Chuck in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Chuck, what's on your mind today?
Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment for Republicans, which is thou shalt not speak ill of any fellow Republicans. Are we seeing...
I think you hung up on yourself, but so I'm not sure what your question was, but it sure looks like the GOP is still doing that, with the exception of Liz Cheney right now. Richard in Huntsville, Texas. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
First point is, and you may have touched on this, and I'm sorry, but I try to catch all your stuff, even though I record it, I don't catch up with all of it. But this so parallels, I mean, let's look at the big picture of the history of the United States. And I'm talking right now pre-Constitutional Convention. The Articles of Confederation wasn't working. The government didn't have any power, didn't have any teeth. And that's what I see going on right now with the inability to enforce subpoenas. And I think we need to revisit pardoning power and revisit Supreme Court powers and alien sedition, you know, like Fox Fix News, and hold accountable these collaborators of the will to destroy democracy. And I see Shay's rebellion as just that so parallels January 6th, and in that it's bringing to mind.
I thought Shay's rebellion was a protest. It was basically people. It was a protest against debt, wasn't it? I'd have to go back and I mixed them up in my brain. The various rebellions at that time.
It was rebellion to paying taxes, but it was state taxes. But yeah, and it was in Massachusetts, and it was the Articles of Confederation, I mean, each state had only one vote, and Congress didn't have the power to tax. And, you had states that were making deals with other countries and stuff like that. But January 6th I'm hoping it's going to be like Shay's Rebellion, in that it's going to trigger people into realizing that the government now doesn't have any teeth. It doesn't have any power, like I said.
Right. It's been paralyzed by the Senate, basically.
Well, you can't even enforce the subpoenas. Okay, that's my first point. And like I said, you probably have touched on that before. I'm sorry if I missed it and just brought it up and reiterated it. But anyway, when 2 years ago, our worst fears was Trump escaping justice and no vaccines in time before we die.
Right.
Now, that was 2 years ago. I mean, I longed for 2 years ago when that was our worst fears. I remember your discussions, when you were talking about how he's probably going to go to another country. I longed for 2 years ago when that was our worst fears. So this is my segue into the question. What do you see where we are 2 years from now?
I think a lot is going to depend on whether the Republicans take control of the House and Senate and whether the Trump faction retains control over the GOP. If both those things happen 2 years from now, in all probability, we will be in the last stages of American democracy and entering a fascist state. If the Republican Party overturns the Trump faction, or if the Democrats hold on to the House and Senate in this election, I think we still have a chance. If the GOP takes the House and Senate, well, it's going to be a tough 2 years, Richard. It's going to be real tough. Lowell in Salem, Oregon. Hey, Lowell, what's on your mind today?
First, I wanted to remind you that there were five Democratic senators that helped block the public option back in 2009.
Yeah, Joe Lieberman was the deciding vote, but you're right.
Exactly. So just to remind you that, you know, and Tom Carper of that list of five is still in the Senate. So he's also a blocker to the public option. But anyway, the California universal health care bill failed. And one of the excuses they used was that Medicare didn't have a waiver for states to, have their own universal health care system. And I want to find out how we can encourage the Democrats to pass that waiver, since they've decided to go with PAYGO to block it at a federal level.
Right.
So maybe encourage.
Right. The way the waiver. Right. The way the law is set up right now, because, you know, Medicaid can be block granted to states. And then the states take the money and they distribute it however they want. And that's why different states have different eligibility requirements for Medicaid. Medicare, on the other hand, cannot be block granted to states. Medicare, being a federal program, basically connects the federal government to the individual receiving it. So when my Medicare expenses are submitted to Medicare, it's me and the federal government. There's no state of Oregon in the middle. And so the problem is, when California wanted to say, okay, we're going to stop all of these various schemes, insurance and everything else, we're going to stop all that and replace it all with Medicare for all. The state is going to cover everybody's health expenses, and we're going to pay for that with a statewide tax. The problem that they encountered was that there are millions and millions of people in California who are on Medicare. And if those people stopped receiving Medicare payments because they're now on the state program, which is what the state legislation would have done, then that lack of Medicare money coming into the state is a financial disaster for the state. The same thing happened to Vermont, by the way. A friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine, was the HEW secretary in Vermont when Peter Shumlin, the governor, got this passed in Vermont. And they tried to do single payer, and then they discovered that the Medicare law is written the way it is, that all of a sudden the state was going to lose all their Medicare funding, and they just couldn't afford to do single payer. You're absolutely right, it requires a waiver. The federal government has to pass a law that Medicare can give an individual state the ability to continue to receive Medicare payments and simply aggregate them into the state's policy or something. There has to be a way to do that. And the problem is that, in fact, there has been legislation introduced several times in the House, and I believe it's passed the House of Representatives for Medicare waivers. It is consistently and regularly blocked by Republicans in the Senate. So that's where we're at.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome, Lowell. Dexter in New York City. Hey, Dexter, what's on your mind today?
I was calling about H.R. 5905. It's a GI reorganization bill that would give GI benefits to descendants of children of World War II veterans and spouses, and the Democrats haven't moved on it at all. I was wondering why it's still stuck in the Veterans Committee. They haven't moved on it at all.
Uh-huh. And therefore,
they haven't moved on a bill at all. It would give GI benefits to descendants of World War II veterans who were denied the benefits when they came out.
Which is basically African-American World War II veterans.
Yeah. That's what it's geared towards.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
And it's stuck in Chairman Tocado's committee. He doesn't want to move on it, seems like. I don't know what's going on.
It's stuck in the Senate, you mean?
It's stuck in the Veterans Affairs Committee.
But you said McConnell. Mitch McConnell, he's a senator.
Mark Tocado out of California.
Okay. My apologies.
But it was introduced also by Senator Warnock out of in Georgia, too.
In
but they haven't moved on the bill.
Yeah.
It's just stuck in committee. I don't know why the Democrats are holding it up.
Yeah. So, what's the name of the legislation?
It's called, I think, the Wood I know it's 5905, the Woodard or Sergeant Woodard legislation. It's called that, something like that, Sergeant Woodard legislation.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. It needs a memorable name. But because I'm trying to figure out, you know, what should we say to people? If you're going to call your member of Congress and ask them to do something about this, do you say, using bill numbers is tough. People don't remember those. Please do something about the legislation that would give GI Bill benefits to the descendants of World War II veterans who were denied it because of their race. Is that a good way to say it?
It was being highlighted on CBS Nightly News. It was highlighted on the news.
Cool. Yeah, well, people should call their members of Congress and advocate for it. Dexter, thanks for flagging that for me. I did not know about it.
Thank you.
I do appreciate it. Thank you. Eileen in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Eileen, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, I'm wondering about the conversation came up recently here about the $250 million that President Trump had received for his funding thing.
Right.
And since there's no accountability for that, I'm kind of comparing it to like a GoFundMe page or something. If I do something like that and I get this income, do I have to put it on my IRS, my income tax? Is that considered taxable income?
The way that Trump has done this is he created a super PAC that he's pouring the money into. And the super PACs, no, he doesn't have to pay taxes on that money. He would only have to pay taxes when he converts it to income. So, for example, when that super PAC paid Kimberly Guilfoyle $80,000 to give a two-minute speech introducing her boyfriend, Trump's son, that $80,000 that they paid to her becomes a taxable event, and she has to pay income tax on it. But the people donating to the super PAC don't get a tax deduction. And by the way, the amount of money that Trump has collected so far looks like it's closer to $400 million or around $385,000 $385 million. $250 million of it, the initial $250 million of it, was when he was claiming that it was going to go into a fund to fight election fraud and all that and investigate.
Okay. I'm wondering then, can I just open a fund for myself and call it a super PAC? I mean,
you can.
Isn't that supposed to be for an election?
In theory, but no, it doesn't have to be for an election. That would be a campaign fund, would be an election campaign fund. Stephen Colbert, back in the day when he was still doing the Colbert Report or whatever it was called, you know, did this amazing thing where he got this lawyer on and they opened a super PAC and he went through all the laws and how it all works and all this kind of stuff. And it was just breathtaking. What a scam this thing is. We need to clean this up, Eileen. We really need to. Eileen, thank you for the call. Jack in Los Angeles. Hey, Jack, what's on your mind today?
Professor Hartman, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, Jack.
I had to call you. Thank you for the tremendous information that you and free speech disseminate every day.
You
are the only news source, besides my deceased father, that mentioned that California changed their gun laws with the emergence of the Black Panther Party.
Oh, yeah. It's a hell of a story, too, isn't it?
I have never heard anyone else mention that but you.
Yeah.
I will listen until I die. I will donate to your station until I die.
Well, thank you, Jack.
And I had one quick thing, because the information is so pertinent. I don't know if you're aware. In 1973, there was a movie that was produced during the blaxploitation era, you know, like the movies that came out, Superfly and Shaft.
Yeah, I remember.
There was a movie, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, called The Spook Who Sat by the Door. Are you familiar with that?
I am not familiar with it.
Okay, I want you to Google it, Professor. The movie was so frightening to the establishment because of the premise of the movie. A black man trained by the CIA came back to the neighborhood and developed an underground army that they pulled the movie from the theater.
Oh, interesting.
It's called The Spook Who Sat by the Door.
I'll have to check it out.
But I will watch you forever. My mother's 93. You are the only news source that we religiously watch. I want to thank you for everything.
Thank you, Jack. Thanks for your kind words, and please say hi to your mother for me.
Okay, thank you.
Good talking to you. Thank you. Glenn in Kalama, Washington. Hey, Glenn, what's on your mind today?
The nationalization of the oil industry, is that idea a fascist idea, a communist idea, or a socialist idea? If none of those, what is it?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, Norway has largely nationalized their oil industry, and they're not a fascist nor a socialist country. You could argue that they're democratic socialist. But, you know, the sovereign wealth front for their country is huge. It's why they have such a high standard of living. Alaska semi-nationalized the oil industry, you know, and created the Alaska Permanent Fund, so everybody in Alaska gets a couple thousand dollars, literally every man, woman, and child in the state every year. There are things like that that we could do. I mean, that wasn't full nationalization. That was basically just charging a fee. You know, we could claim that the oil in the United States is U.S. property, and we could raise royalties on it. And that's something that could probably be done administratively. There are a lot of ways to go on that, Glenn. And
yeah, what about a cooperative?
You know, cooperatives are possible. I mean, it would be a big lift because, of course, the oil industry has a lot of money and a lot of political power, and they would yell and scream and call it communism, I guarantee you that. And therefore, I don't think it's a fight that's really worth having, but it's something that we should keep in our back pocket. Glenn, thanks a lot for the call. David in Fresno. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, Tom. We enjoy your program so much.
Thank you.
I was wanting to talk a little bit about the student loan crisis. I grew up in a small town in Michigan near Kalamazoo in the early 60s, or I went to college. And my mother worked at a factory. My father had died. And I was able to go through the University of Michigan and also a year at the University of Madrid. And I thank you for your analysis of the Reagan contribution to this. My theory is that we were able to educate several or many working class people. And from that, we had the 60s sort of a cultural revolution. And I think that scared I think it scared the power elite.
Oh, it absolutely did. Russell Kirk wrote a book about this in 51, The Conservative Mind, predicting essentially the 60s and saying that, you know, when that happens, when the young people and the black people and the women rise up, that's when the government has to crack down and defund the middle class. And that was Reagan's mandate. Reaganism has moved $50 trillion out of the pockets of the middle class, the American working class, and into the pockets of the top 1%. And they did it under the rubric of it's going to ensure social stability.
That's fascinating. I really appreciate having that information.
Yeah, no,
I had an argument with my cousin from Arkansas saying I couldn't go to the University of Michigan today.
Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
He said, you just have to get a job and you could do it. And I said, no, I couldn't.
Yeah, get a job as a well-paid job. That would be the only way to do it. Yeah, David, spot on. Reagan did gut education in the United States.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.